This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. Every day.
Oh, I used to love to make you cry. Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. You heard him on the broadcast. You see him on national television. He's one of the great hockey broadcasters in the country. He is Joe Micheletti. He joins us now. Joe, great to hear your voice. How are you?
Hey, great. Great to be with you, Frank. I'm doing excellent. Thanks. How are you?
Very good. Before we get going with some present hockey discussion, yesterday was the 30th anniversary of the death of the late, great Dan Kelly. Can you give our listening audience a little idea of just how great he was and what kind of impact he had in the National Hockey League?
Oh boy, I wish we had more time because Dan was such a. I can only, you know, I'll speak from a personal viewpoint first that I, whatever success that I've had in the business is because of Dan. Is the way I look at, you know, my own career and what and the influence he had on me, and it was mostly radio that Dan and I worked together. And. And from a national perspective, from people that are that don't have the personal relationship, but just from a standpoint of a fan or players or coaches that knew Dan, a lot of the players now don't, but they certainly the older players do. He is still regarded as just about as good as anybody that's ever broadcast the game. And when I talk to some of the people that remember Dan. Remember him that way as always professional, always fair, and that was the thing about Dan. We know his great calls and his tremendous voice and his ability to paint a picture on radio that was unlike any other broadcaster. But the thing I learned from Dan, and the thing that I think people really recognized, was that. You know, he was professional in how he and how he approached the games. He was professional in the way he broadcast the games. He was he loved the sport and loved the people involved in the sport, and that came across loud and clear. And if you weren't professional working with him, then there was going to be an issue with him. And that was something that he taught me very, very early on, and something I'll never forget. And it's amazing. It's been 30 years. I miss him dearly.
And, Joe, I imagine after every game you work with Dan on the road, it ended with a steak at some great steakhouse.
Yeah, I have changed my I have changed my lifestyle a little bit since then. But that was but it wasn't only that. But with Dan, for me, we used to use that time because many, many times it was just the two of us and on the road. And so we used to use that time, or I should say, he used to use that time to give me my critique. And those years I was doing just a lot of listening, and because the things he would say to me were, everything was eye-opening to me because I knew absolutely nothing about the business. So we would sit and he would go through his critique. And it was tremendously helpful to me.
I imagine, too, starting off in the booth doing radio analysis for a Blues game with Dan Kelly and the pace of the game so quick, that had to be, because you didn't want to step on Dan. You had to be in and out. That must have really been tough in the beginning.
I will tell you a very quick story, and if I'm repeating myself to you, because we've spoken many times, Frank, I apologize to the listeners, but the first game that I ever worked with Dan was a preseason game in Peoria, Illinois, between the Blues and the Detroit Red Wings. I had no idea what it was like to be a broadcaster. I thought it was easy because I would, like many, many St. Louis people, we got to listen to Dan and Bob Costas and Dan Dierdorf and Jack Buck and Jay Randolph, and you go through the list of all the great broadcasters, Ron Jacober, and you know, they made it sound so easy that I thought, well, okay, you just show up in the booth, and when it's your time to talk, you go ahead and talk. And the first game I ever worked with Dan, the Detroit Red Wings, I think it was the Blues, scored a goal about 7 or 8 minutes into this preseason game, and it was the first time I'd ever been in the booth with Dan. And as he's making his patented goal call, I said something. And he looked at me with these steely eyes and like he was going to kill me. And he went to a commercial break, and he turned to me and he says, "If you ever do that again, you're fired." And I said, "What'd I do?" He said, "Don't talk when I'm talking." And so that was an early lesson, and one of many. But we had I loved the guy for who he was and what he taught me. And you know, he would come across sometimes as, you know, as a hard nose, but he was so professional in what he did. That was, that's the only way he wanted to do it. And anybody that was going to fool with that, he had a problem with. So
the great Joe Micheletti joins us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all new 590 The Fan. All right. Let's get to yesterday. You know, for months, we've been really down about this hockey team, questioning the heart and wondering if Vladimir Tarasenko would ever realize his superstardom. And yesterday, you see him at his best. What would you take away from that one, Joe?
Well, you know, Frank, I'll start. You know, I was there in St. Louis right after Christmas when the Rangers played the Blues. And the Blues actually played pretty well that game. And I remember watching some games leading up to that. I'm going, boy, oh, boy, this team is not very good. And there was a lot of reasons for that. And they just looked disjointed. They looked disinterested at times. They looked their goaltending wasn't very good. And there were a lot of reasons why things weren't going well. And when I started watching, I watched 3, 4, 5 games of theirs prior to yesterday. And as I'm watching these games, I'm thinking, boy, this is a different team than what I saw before. They look like they're engaged. They look like they're a team that's putting pressure on. They look like a team that's playing together. And so to me, it's a different team now than what it was, you know, 6 or 8 weeks ago. And I can see, and then in having a number of conversations with Craig Berube and what he was trying to do when he took over and what was the areas of concern. And he's been able to right the ship there and, kind of get everybody on the same page and everybody thinking that, you know, that this is, you know, that they've that this is a team. You're supposed to play as a team, and you're supposed to buy into what everybody's trying to do. And certainly, without question, you have to have goaltending to give your team some confidence. You can have a really good team with many good players that are all trying to do the same thing, but if your goaltending is mediocre, then you're not going to win. It's as simple as that. And so that's, I think, what they were going through. Jake Allen, especially at home, wasn't playing very well. And so with Binnington coming in and doing what he's done, he's helped this entire process of making the saves, getting some wins, winning some games on his own, giving team confidence. I think the fact that he moved Tarasenko up with O'Reilly and ended up moving Braden Schenn from center to wing. That's been a really good line. It's helped both players just playing with O'Reilly. And so I think there's a lot of reasons why this team is playing, you know, much better than what they were before. And a lot of it has to do with the coach. But he's always one to say, listen, it's the players that are buying in, and they have. And I think Tarasenko, I've been critical of Tarasenko in the past, especially a few years ago in the conference finals. But he's found his game and he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
How about a thought on Craig Berube? He's certainly not Ken Hitchcock in terms of being an eloquent soundbite after a game, but boy, he just seems to get it and connect with players. Your take?
He's not a simple man, but he speaks simplistically and direct and to the point. And I think with Ken Hitchcock, he'll make a point, but then he's always been very good at elaborating and taking it to a second, third, fourth, fifth step, which is eloquent and great the way he explains it. With Craig, he just says it and he moves on. And I think that's one thing that the players really like about him is that there aren't any gray areas. I mean, You know, and one of the things I talked to him about a couple of days ago, we spent some time on the phone just getting ready for the game, and I asked him about individual meetings and one-on-ones and, you know, what's your message and what are you trying to do? And he said, you know, I have some. Tarasenko's been one of them where he's had a lot of individual meetings with him and just having discussions. But a lot of this is, he says he gets, instead of that, he gets three or four players in together. And if three or four players are not playing well, he gets them in and he says, listen, here's what I need you guys to do, and here's what you're not doing, here's what you can do, here's what you're capable of doing, here's how you can help the team. And so I think his way of doing things is simplistic. It's easy to understand for the players. And I think that if you listen to the way he talks, sometimes it can be perceived as maybe someone that is so simplistic in the way he talks that he's not all that knowledgeable about the game. But that's totally not true. I mean, he's a very sophisticated hockey coach that goes about it in a simple way.
I know you didn't see Binnington yesterday. You saw Jake Allen, who did get 40 saves despite giving up four goals. I know you've been watching Binnington. He came here kind of with a chip on his shoulder because the Blues had so many other young goalies that they thought were better than he was. And now he's the first star of the week that was just announced moments ago. He's just been out of sight.
And he's one of those players and one of those people that is a story that that should be told, and I think those are the types of situations that really bring a smile to your face for someone who he's not 20 years old like Hart in Philadelphia, their young goaltender, but someone who's put in almost 200 games in the American Hockey League and played in the East Coast League and doesn't have a goaltending consultant or a goaltending coach and is figuring it out on his own. And it's just simply perseverance, and good for him to have a chip on his shoulder because especially this day and age of social media, and I don't know if he's a participant, I'm not, but whether he is or not, it's easy to get on there and start believing some of the things you read or hear. And so for him just to keep going forward, keep moving forward, keep trying, keep learning, and to finally get his chance and do what he's done, I think it's just a fabulous story. It really is. It's one of the great stories that's developing in the second half of the season.
You know, everybody in St. Louis is skeptical of this run because this team just a few months ago was like 30th in the league. But, throughout the bad stretches, we always mention on the radio, it's a good-looking roster. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly's a really good player. Braden Schenn, Tarasenko, they have really good players. I'm wondering, this weekend you just beat one of the best teams in hockey back-to-back games. Do you believe this is a team that could make a run, or are we getting a little too excited too early?
No, I don't think you're getting too excited too early. But let's, again, here's the simplicity of it. If both goaltenders suddenly start not being able to stop the puck, the team can keep playing the way they're playing right now and miss the playoffs. That's the nature of this sport. Take Philadelphia as another example of a team that was right down there where the Blues were, and they make a coaching change. He does some tweaking to the lineup, and they get, their seventh goalie to come into the lineup, and suddenly he's allowing one or two goals a game, and he's winning some games on his own. And now your teams get some confidence, and now the coach, and they go on to win eight or nine games in a row and are unbeaten in 10. Those things happen when you get some goaltending. And then when you look at, I remember talking to Chuck Fletcher when about 2 weeks ago, who's the new GM in Philadelphia, and I asked him about the team, and he said, "Listen, we are a team that has a lot of really good players, and we're not a very good team. So we got to take these good players and make them into a good team." I think that's similar to what's happening in St. Louis. You've got a bunch of players that are good players, they're solid players, they can do some really good things. I don't think they were a very good team. Part of that, and a big part of it, is goaltending. You have to have good, solid goaltending to allow those players to gain confidence and play. And I don't think the Blues are finished yet. I look at them and, you know, at what point in time is Jaden Schwartz going to break out? I mean, I feel sorry for the
yeah.
kid. You know, I talked to him yesterday before the game, and I said to him, I said, how you doing? He said, great. He said, great. I'm doing great. You know, he's got the kind of attitude that you love to have on a team. And at some point in time, and he had a few more of that chance he had in the first period yesterday, hits a defenseman's skate with a wide open net. I mean, that's the way things are going for him. But you know at some point in time that he's going to be better than the three goals that he has this season. You're going to get David Perron back. There's a chance he might play tomorrow. He was playing fabulous hockey before he got hurt. Tarasenko, as we talked about, is getting his game back together. You know, so this team is gaining some confidence. You've got a third and fourth line that's giving you some really good minutes. And I talked to Doug Armstrong early Saturday morning. He was in Russia. He got back late last night, but he was in Russia, and I talked to him about, you know, what's different now about the way he manages this team versus 6 weeks ago. And he said it's totally changed from where they were 6 weeks ago. He said he doesn't want to rent a player to put in the lineup because he thinks he's got enough depth on this with this group here plus what he's got in the minors. So he's not worried about the depth. Now, if they suddenly fall out of it again, he might get rid of the players that are unrestricted come July 1st, which is the smart thing to do. But, you know, this is a team that can still grow, I think.
Who's the best team in the West?
That's a great question. I would say this, and I'm heading to Winnipeg this afternoon. They are certainly one of the best teams in the West. And it looks like their goaltending, Connor Hellebuck, is starting to play much, much better than he did earlier in the season. And so that makes them that much better. Plus, I still think that they're going to make a move within the next 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today is the trade deadline, 3 Eastern. I still think they're going to make a move and add another center. They did last year. And then, of course, with Paul Stastny, and he was great for them. And I think they're going to do it again this year. So I would say if you're not looking at Winnipeg, then you've got to be looking. Certainly Nashville is there, but they're not playing their best yet, I think, because of injuries. But I think the other team, if they get the goaltending, that you really have to look out for is San Jose. I mean, San Jose's goaltending, their save percentage is under 90%. It's about 89%. And yet they're one of the best teams in the league. If they ever got goaltending, look out, because I think that they're built to win a Stanley Cup.
Before I let you go, the other day, Miracle was on one of the cable stations, and I've always wanted to ask you this because you're a Minnesota guy. Did your paths cross with Herb Brooks over the years?
Herb was almost a part of my family.
Wow.
That's how close we were. Herb recruited me when I was in high school. And I played 4 years for Herb at Minnesota. We won a couple of national championships and a runner-up. He became a brother to my brothers. He became a son to my parents. And when I lost my parents, first of all, my father died before my mother. And Herb drove through a blizzard from Minneapolis, St. Paul, to get to my father's funeral up in Hibbing, which is about 190 miles north of Minneapolis, St. Paul, drove through a blizzard to be there. And when my mother passed away, I remember getting a phone call. He left a message for me, and he said, Joe, he said, I'm in Montreal. I just heard about your mom. He said, I just started a two-week, he was working for Pittsburgh at the time, and he said, I just started a two-week scouting trip. And I'm sorry I won't be able to be there, but I wanted to let you know how sorry I am that you lost your mom. So I end up, you know, getting back to Minnesota for my mother's funeral and, you know, for the few days up in Hibbing. And guess who shows up? Herb.
Wow.
I mean, and that's the kind of relationship that he had with my family. He was the greatest coach that I ever played for. I learned more about the game from Herb than anybody else. And that's the kind of person he was. And I'll tell you one very quick story if you have the time.
Yeah, no, we do. Go ahead.
Because I know. Okay, I'll tell you one very quick story. Here's the tragedy of losing Herb like we did, because he died, of course, in that car wreck, and he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and he got thrown out of the vehicle, and then the vehicle rolled over on him. And so, but here's the thing about Herb. Herb back in the early 70s when he was a head coach at the University of Minnesota. He had a player that played for him. The kid was from International Falls, Minnesota. His name was Wally Olds. And Wally was a good player, but off the ice, he was about as smart of an individual as you could find. Extremely book smart, very, very intelligent guy. And so Herb went to him one day and he says, Wally, he says, I've got a project for you. He says, you know, I'm in my car all the time and I'm driving all over the state trying to recruit. He said, I need a new car and I want you to go out and you find me the safest car that's on the road now and do that because then that's what I'm going to buy. So Wally Olds says, okay, fine. So Wally Olds went out and did all this research and came back to Herb and he said, the safest car is a Volvo. It's the safest car on the road. So Herb went out and bought a Volvo. But you know what he didn't do? Never wore a seatbelt. As bright as he was, and as much as he thought about that, and you know, the police and the cops up in northern Minnesota used to find him, Herb, on the side of the road after he'd go recruiting, you know, in the middle of the night, he'd pull over, go to sleep for a while, and then drive back to, you know, that's how hard he worked to recruit there. But that was the only thing about Herb, is that I was supposed to see him that weekend because it was a U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame golf outing for the weekend, and a couple of my brothers were up in northern Minnesota, and then he drove back and he called his daughter about 45 minutes before he was going to get to his home. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and said, don't worry about taking out the dog, I'm almost home. And he had to go to Chicago that night. It was a Sunday, and I stayed in New York because my daughter Allison had a big basketball tournament, so I stayed with her. And that's when he fell asleep at the wheel and rolled his van. It was a minivan, and the cab was intact, and he got ejected and died. And for a guy that was that bright, that's the one thing he never did was wear a seatbelt.
Wow.
So that's how well I knew Herb.
I imagine when you watch the movie Miracle, it's kind of emotional at times?
I've never watched it.
Wow.
I haven't been able to watch it. My kids have watched it, and I've had a lot of friends that have watched it, and, you know, I talked to a lot of the Olympic players that have watched it, and they said it was close to being very accurate. You know, it was very well done. But I have not watched the movie.
Joe, are you a grandfather yet?
Five times over. Oh my
God. Congratulations. your lovely
it's
daughter.
Great fun.
And is your son married yet? Let's see.
Yeah, my son is married now, Adam, and living in St. Louis. And he and his wife have a 19-month-old daughter as well. So my daughter Allison has four kids. She just had another boy 3.5 months ago. They've got twins that are 4.5 and a boy and a girl, and they have another little daughter that's 2, and I'm the luckiest guy on earth.
That's awesome. Joe, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Frank, I really appreciate you having me on as much as you do, and it's always great to get caught up and spend time with you. Thanks again.
The great Joe Micheletti joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. All right, we'll take a short timeout. When we come back, some texts, some phone calls, reaction on that interview, reaction on Adam Long. And the question of the day is, we're asking you this. If the Cardinals' 5 starters are Waka, Michaelis, Wainwright, Martinez, and Flaherty, if you had to guess that those 5, would you guess that those 5 will get the most starts, or would you guess it's going to be somebody else?